Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. We're recording February 2nd for publication on February 3rd. We didn't have a money in markets last week. It was the last week of the month. So when you sent me the spreadsheet, John, we had 91 stories.
Sorry, I thought it was 88.
No, it was 91. But we got it down. We got it down to what's most important. Our theme this week is taking advantage of control grid growing pains. It's interesting, we're watching the COVID restrictions soften or back down in many, many places, but quietly the control grid is squeezing in and moving, you know, quietly. But what we're watching is all the players, the tech companies, the financial companies, they're all squabbling and fighting while the politicians are trying to figure out how to change the name and market. And you can see the friction and discomfort of getting the control grid into place is enormous and no greater than both in the United States and Russia. What we're watching is fighting breaking out between the CBDC crowd and the private crypto crowd as they fight for sort of regulatory and legislative turf. So,
yeah, and I would say not so much fighting. A lot of these companies, a lot of these countries, it seems like they're jockeying for position.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
And I would add to Russia, which is sort of a surprise entrant in our field of jockeys, Iran, surprisingly, shows up in one of these stories.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
End. Yeah.
Well, the Americans are making noise that they really are holding in their back pocket, throwing Russia off a SWIFT. And that's going to bring in Iran in a big way.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Iran shows up in a story. It's kind of surprising. But anyway. Anyway, you want to get into it?
Let's dive in.
Let's hit it. So we start off, as we always do, with Farmageddon. First story, no surprise here. U.S. now requires travelers crossing land borders to be fully vaccinated. So the key is it's land borders.
You know, right.
Okay.
So you know, sorry, go ahead.
Let me, it's short here. Non-U.S. citizens, so it doesn't apply to U.S. citizens. Non-U.S. citizens entering the U.S. via land borders and seaports will need proof of full vaccination from January 22nd. The U.S. made proof of vaccination mandatory for most travelers in November 2021, unless they had a medical exemption. Now, they make it sound from the context here that medical exemption really means essential worker. As a result, essential workers could cross land borders without proof of vaccination because over two-thirds of goods traded between the U.S. and Canada travel via roads. As of today, this is no longer the case. So the new restrictions apply to both travelers for essential and non-essential purposes, and then Canada's doing its part to get the vaccination going.
So one of the truckers in the trucker convoy was on Tucker Carlson and went on and on about the QR codes, which was good. Yeah. But what was interesting is, he complained about the fact that the border guard already had his QR code before he pulled into the crossing.
He's like, "Oh, you're Jimmy James."
Yeah.
That's like, what?
What?
Like, what? How'd you know that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they're on you.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep it going. Next story. Military doctors on vaccine injuries, 1,000% increase in neurological issues. That's certainly not the only issue. This is small print. I'm going to zoom in. Whistleblower doctors in U.S. military have revealed shocking data on COVID vaccine safety and heartbreaking stories of young soldiers suffering sudden cancers and heart disorders after taking the vaccine. So they run through just the gamut of injuries, 1,000% increase in diagnosis codes. That's how they're doing this.
Right.
Is they're it's really kind of objective what they're doing. 1,000% increase in diagnosis codes in military for neurological issues, 300% increase in miscarriages, 300% increase in cancer diagnoses since the vaccines were distributed. DoD medical billing data from the Department of Medical Epidemiology database, which records medical billing codes for any medical diagnosis in the military submitted for insurance billing. So they're going through, you know, the military's own data here.
Right.
And then they break it out a little bit more here. These we already saw up here. But the new batch down here, myocardial infarction, 269%, Bell's palsy, congenital malformations, female infertility, and pulmonary embolisms, all increasing, you know, in the military.
Right.
So that's our soldiers.
Right.
You know?
And their families.
And their families.
Right.
Yeah, this is, it's, so now it's no longer about your health, and it's certainly no longer about the defense of the U.S. either.
No, you're basically, if you want to globalize the military, first you have to destroy the U.S. military.
Wow. That's just an awful story.
Here's the thing. The thing you learn when you work in Washington at a high position is that you can tell where a system wants to go when it refuses to learn. So if a system says we're going to the right, but it really proceeds to the left, when you say, hey, you're going to the left and it won't change, it keeps going to the left.
Yeah.
Then what you realize is the system wants to go to the left. I'll never forget, you know, because you have to listen in Washington to, oh, we really want to go to the right, but it keeps going to the left. Oh, it's really hard to change to the right. Oh, you know, we want to change to the right, but there's this regulation and we need to do that. You know, so there's 1,001 excuses on why you can't switch to go to the right.
Right.
The best right. one the two, I ever
the,
saw.
The incompetence excuse.
Right. The complexity. All those dumb
government. Yeah.
But when right. Washington wants to move and the entire U.S. military wants to move, the speed at which they can go will frighten even you. It's amazing to watch when they want to really go. And one of the beautiful examples was the speed at which, if I get this right, remember it was Viagra. The speed at which the Congress made sure that Viagra could be reimbursable under insurance. I think they did it in like a day or an hour. It was remarkable.
It'd have been funnier if it was a laxative, but you know, that's pretty funny.
No, it was record speed.
Wow.
Right. Wow. So I've seen the bureaucracy move at lightning speed. There is nothing fast. The US bureaucracy, when it's ready to go and when everything is in alignment, is like grease lightning. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, but you're right that I learned that during the non-prosecution of the banks in the wake
right.
of the financial crisis.
There you go.
It finally dawned on me, you're killing yourself with anger. It took me a while to figure out, probably listening to you, the system's doing exactly what it is meant to do.
Right.
It's all by design. It's none of these other things matter. Anyway.
Right.
This next story is a great little handy list to keep for yourself. Definitely bookmark this one. From Amex to Walmart, here are the companies mandating the COVID vaccine for employees. And they just have a nice, clean, alphabetical list. Amex, some are surprising. Amtrak, I was on Amtrak a lot in December. Let's see if I can zoom in here. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I was on Amtrak, and a lot of black employees on Amtrak who they're not fans of the vaccine, generally speaking. Anthem, BlackRock, no surprise there. Carhartt, bad Carhartt. Cisco, surprising because they showed up in a story earlier on Money on Markets that was Intel. I take that back.
Right.
Citigroup. Anyway, here you go. Here are your lists of bad companies. But I found our conversation yesterday, Catherine, about, you know, you did ESG screens and you said something very interesting about these companies.
What right. I asked one of the people who helps me with the screen to check, but just running through it, I couldn't find any company that was on our approved list. So, you know, and what we're screening for is essentially our focus is on governance, but we're just trying to screen out companies that have as a business model organized crime. So I'm looking for companies that just do something fundamentally productive, very simple. Doesn't mean they don't make mistakes, doesn't mean they're perfect. But it was amazing when I went through that list, I didn't see anybody that we had on the screen.
Yeah, and now yeah. Hershey has joined that list.
Oh, yeah. Hershey's joined that list? I got to check because yep. I think Hershey's yep. on. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that. Anyway, yeah. Next story is interesting. It's predictable, but it's interesting for another reason. This is from The Hill. FDA fully approves Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Now, let's just kind of scroll through this one, because I've got some stuff highlighted in blue. This is definitely, The Hill is sort of like left, corporate left propaganda.
Right.
And that becomes very clear when they just, to make sure that the readers get the message, I've got this highlighted in blue. FDA fully approved Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine, giving an additional vote of confidence in its safety and effectiveness. Full approval provides an extra emphasis. Acting FDA Commissioner Janet Woodcock said she hoped the move would give some people additional confidence. And we understand that for some individuals, she says FDA approval of vaccine may instill additional confidence. Are you getting it yet?
It was like Vandalay's totally speech at Day of confident. Davos. Trust, trust. Must have heard the word trust 40 times. Here's my concern. I'm waiting to get a briefing on this, but what are the chances this will help them bring the employee mandate back?
That's a great question, and I don't know.
That's what I'm waiting. I hope to have an answer to that next week. My concern is they're going to use a full approval of one that's available, because remember, the Pfizer one approved is not available. They're going to use it to try and get the mandate back.
But that was never really, well, it's a good question, because right. that was never really the impediment.
Right.
The lack, the emergency use versus the full approval, that wasn't what was bothering the courts. What was bothering right. the courts was it's indiscriminate. It's a sledgehammer aimed at a, you know, at a flower. It's just a right. completely the wrong tool.
Right.
It's way too broad. I mean, there were constitutional problems that are not going to be cured by full approval.
Right.
So I'll be interested to hear what you have to say in a week, because I do find that story rather, it's timing.
Well, the clear indication I'm getting is that this is to help with giving it to the kids, particularly the young kids. You know, so they're looking to market younger, but I'm still worried about they're going to try and make it, they're going to do everything they can to weasel into an employee mandate. So if you look at the companies that are still mandating it, it makes it easier for those companies to mandate, and the pressure can be backdoor instead of an OSHA regulation.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
For sure. That's not out of the blue, that story. But I don't see how they're going to get around to all those rulings, because that was what stymied them. That's when the back off started, was when the courts came down and said, you forget this.
Well, it's interesting. I sent you the link. The Chinese apparently are demanding AstraZeneca officials show up to answer charges that they were fiddling with the patient records. They're calling it medical insurance fraud. Now, this is interesting because yesterday I interviewed one of the Indian attorneys that's suing the Serum Institute and Gates for essentially vaccine murder related to the AstraZeneca injection, the one that is now not approved by 18 European countries. But her point was, India and China, you know, there is no liability protection for the corporations. And so if the lawsuits get opened up in India and China and the disclosure comes out about what's really going on and what these guys knew, because from the pathology reports, it's clear that these companies knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. And in generally speaking, in law, you know, all bets are off in terms of any statute, any proceeding, when there is fraud. Okay. So, for example, if you perpetrate fraud on a court, like gin up right. evidence to start that whole case is coming down, and there's no statute of limitations.
Okay. So here's my question to you. If there's no liability protection in China and India, and the courts in China and India can demand full disclosure, that disclosure will become accessible to people in the West. And yes. if fraud exists, then the liability gets stripped in the West as well, right?
No. Incorrect, because they'd say the fraud, they're only that judgment, that pronouncement only applies to certain areas, and the U.S. ain't one of them.
Well, but wait a minute, the doctors are still liable, and if it's known
by whom?
Well, let me give you an example. The Doctors for COVID Ethics wrote a letter to the EMA, the European Medical Agency, saying that the vaccines would do this and putting them on notice and delivering a notice of liability. You were on notice.
Yeah.
The pathology reports that have now come out prove that that letter was right. It's documented. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
They knew. And that material was sent to literally thousands of doctors.
Okay.
They knew.
In the U.S.?
In Europe. In this case, in Europe.
Yeah. Okay, right.
Other people have been sending notices of liability in the U.S. I don't know exactly what was in them.
Yeah. It's very fact-specific, and it depends on, remember, it depends ultimately on a judicial system or an enforcement system, really, that cares about fraud.
Okay, but let me ask you something. If the disclosure comes out that the pharmaceutical companies and Gates and the Serum Institute, et cetera, engaged in fraud in India and China, that's the same. Then people in the G7 nations will be aware that it's the same fraud, whether the evidence is admissible or not. Wait, hold on. And that means enterprising lawyers know if they can get the liability protection stripped or go into a situation like hospital and doctors where there is no liability protection, there's serious money to be made. In other words,
I don't think so. No.
Really?
It's not going to fly because it's going to apply to companies. You know, these corporations are really smart in the way they divvy themselves up.
Absolutely.
Okay, so, you know, like UBS Securities, there's UBS Securities US, UBS is a Swiss company, UBS Securities Japan. And if you look at the judgments against these different companies, it's always against one of the local ones like that.
So I agree with, let's say that applies to Pfizer. But that won't apply to local hospitals and doctors.
Yeah, but then you've got to tag them with knowledge.
Right, but if you can, then you got their insurance company, right?
Yeah, I mean maybe, but that's a big ask is trying to tag doctors with knowledge when they've got reams and reams and reams of these peer-reviewed studies that support the party line, and you say one guy came along and happened to throw. You know, random dart, you know, you throw 1,000 darts, of course one of them hit the bullseye. You can't retroactively use that and sub-judgment from China and try to get proof fraud here. The standard for fraud, even civil fraud, is clear and convincing evidence.
I can see that that's true for a doctor. But if you look at the reports of whistleblowers who've insisted that the hospitals wouldn't let them report the adverse events on VAERS and who have documented enormous numbers of adverse events, so the hospital had to know.
Yeah, right. Catherine, we're talking about a marginal difference of proof. You already have VAERS. How many lawsuits do you see on fraud? Zero. Are you telling me this is going to push the case over the goal line?
No, I'm not telling you it's going to push the case. It's going to send a whiff. The fear in the insurance companies is going to send a whiff of opportunity to enough lawyers that something's going to happen if the politics are there. I don't know. I'm going to go chase this down. But what I hear is, you know, and you may be right. It just happens in the countries where there's no liability protection. But my prediction is it's meaningful because I sent you the headline. Melinda Gates has now announced that her fortune is going to other philanthropic endeavors, tells me she doesn't want to put that money at risk.
Yeah, that's an interesting read on that.
Right. She thinks there's liability there. That's what it says to me.
Or her advisors do. There's this is why you have needless exposure to risk here.
Right.
Get out.
Would you want to put your fortune into something that might have to give it away?
Right.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Changing gears, let's go to Global Turf Wars to a story that the more I read about the story, the more I wonder about it. All right, here we go.
Okay.
The Wall Street Journal, this is Ukraine. NATO to send ships, jet fighters to Eastern Europe amid standoff with Russia. Zoom in, get that whole thing. Okay. NATO allies are bolstering the alliance's eastern flank in response to Russia's military buildup around Ukraine. As the EU sets up plans for loans and grants for Kiev worth more than $1.3 billion. And the Pentagon ordered thousands of troops to prepare for possible deployment. President Biden held a video conference with European leaders Monday afternoon to coordinate the transatlantic response to the Russian troop buildup. Pentagon said it ordered up to 8,500 troops on standby for deployment to Eastern Europe. U.S. Officials said, you get it. Okay. So it's serious. The U.S. is rattling its saber there. But what gives?
So here's the question. Is this a real fight or is this something else? The White House has made it clear, and they've asked Congress to support a whole new round of sanctions, including economic sanctions targeted at individuals, leadership, people around Putin. Right. But in their back pocket, they say they want to be able to pull Russia from SWIFT. Now, if you pull Russia from SWIFT, the chances that Russia retaliates by limiting or canceling gas and oil into the market, particularly to Europe, is possible. So, and why would they do that? Not necessarily to cut off oil and gas to Europe, but to tank the... I mean, do you know what that would do to the derivatives market? Do you have any idea? I mean, that's real dollar economic warfare. So... Right. So if this thing heats up, you know, it's big. Now, one very smart subscriber said to me the other day, have you noticed there are tons of meetings around the Ukraine situation that involve all sorts of people you would never expect to be involved in the Ukraine situation? And it looks like, to me, this is just a big excuse for everybody to get together and meet about...
Whatever.
Whatever.
Don't want to talk about.
Right.
Yeah, my thing on this story is I just don't see Russia having, I just don't think there's a threat there. Russia's not going to go in militarily to Ukraine. It's just not going to happen. So what's this really about? This to me has the earmarks of a cover story. And when I looked, I was like, you know, I wonder if this is being used as an excuse to, you know, gin up some massive financial, basically get back into QE.
Right.
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 And so I checked a graph. If we have time, I want to show you a graph that I was like, whoa, I didn't know that. It just happened. It's just very recent development.
Oh, definitely. Let's look at it.
On monetary stuff. Yeah, you want to see it?
Yeah. So are they injecting massive money while they're promising to raise interest rates?
Let me show you this. I'm going to cut to it. Okay.
Okay.
This is from Fred. Okay. So this is loans and leases and bank credit. So this is, you could see, this is 2008, this big gray bar.
Yeah,
that's the financial crisis, and this is the skinny gray bar is pandemic. Okay, loans and leases. You know, remember our money is created. Electronic money is created by loans.
Right.
And look, when it starts to dip or flatline, you've got a real problem on your hands in an expanding economy.
Right.
Okay. So that's when the crisis hits. Okay. Looky over here, if it kind of gets flat right around the pandemic, we could kind of look past that one. That was
right.
Look at this over here. It just started to flatten out at the very end of last year. It's like, what's going on? Now, you might say, well, quantitative easing is also going on. So I'll go to the next graph, which is the same blue graph. Flattens out here, flattens out there. This is, the red line is bank deposits. Okay,
yep.
Total bank deposits. So that's really the retail money supply. And you can see it flattens there. And then here, as the Fed is supposedly quantitative tightening, it's flattening here too. And that's not good. That is not good. That is bad for business. That could mean you've got a crisis on your hands coming soon to a neighborhood near you. And that's what this Ukraine might be about. Like,
well,
oh, we got the Russians. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. We need to spend a lot of money.
Well, I would argue there's a crisis in the heartland ongoing. You just mean a crisis in the...
I mean a real life, like stock market crashing, financial crisis.
Right. Right. So
like where even CNBC goes, this is really bad.
Well, you know, there's a massive crisis among people all over the world that COVID has delivered. I mean, you destroyed a million businesses in the United States. We're just saying the bubble will experience a crisis.
The bubble.
Right.
The fantasy. The fantasy explodes. Right.
Okay.
Right.
So the crisis will hit the bubble will hit a crisis.
That's kind of what I'm reading from that. I'll have to keep my eye on it, but
I
didn't know that was going on. That flatlining, that's not where you want to be in a debt-based monetary system.
Right.
That means you got trouble. You got problems.
Well, here's the thing. The COVID op is over in terms of bank profits, corporate profits. I mean, they've harvested a huge amount. So the question is, what's next? Because it's a non-recurring item, right?
Yeah.
If you steal the market share from a million businesses, once you've got it, that's over. Where's your next deal?
Right.
Right.
All right. Let's hit the next story. This concerns. I love this. I love this next publication, oilprice.com. It's all about the oil price. This very focused publication here. U.S. liquid natural gas cargoes flocked to Europe amid record high gas prices. Very concerned about gas prices. Europe, where the gas and energy crisis has pushed regional LNG prices way above Asian LNG benchmark and 14 times higher than the U.S. Henry Hub price. Okay. So that's the backdrop to this. So that's what they're saying. This is why tankers are being rerouted. Freezing temperatures across Europe, low Russian gas supply, and low wind power generation in Germany have all combined to send European and UK gas prices to new records on Tuesday. According to data cited by Reuters, flows of natural gas from Russia on the Yamal-Europe pipeline via Belarus to Poland and Germany have been falling since the start of the weekend, stopped completely on Tuesday, and then reversed direction from Germany east to Poland. Wow.
Right. So no, we've been getting warning for months in Europe, you know, get ready for gas outages, shortages, energy hiccups, blah, blah, blah. So somebody's getting the general population ready just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of alarming, though. The 14 times higher. Those are, you know, reversing flow. That's tectonic stuff.
Right.
You know, and I have to think that whatever's going on in Ukraine is connected to that.
Of course. Well, Russia is a huge supplier of gas and energy to Europe. So Europe is highly dependent on Russia for its gas and energy. And, you know, some of this is coming up because of the new pipeline to Germany. So I just looked at the Austrian, you know, if you look at Austria's dependency on Russian oil and gas, it's unbelievable. So if in theory the U.S. knocked Russia off of SWIFT and Russia decided to cut gas, I mean, Russia could shut Europe down.
Yeah, which is why I don't think the Ukraine, it's yet another reason, I don't think that's a real conflict there. I don't think the U.S. would risk that because it would alienate Europe. If Europe shut down the gas, if Russia shut down the gas, it'd be catastrophic in Europe. I don't know.
Here's the, if you look at what's going on between U.S. and Russia, logic is not necessarily driving the train. But I think if you look at the people who are running the U.S. side of this fight, they're looking at the rise of the land bridge from Asia to Europe. I mean, if you look at the geopolitics, Asia is the manufacturing juggernaut. Europe is the largest consumer market. And Russia is the land bridge that covers all of it and goes all the way from the tip of Asia to into Europe. And this puts Russia in the catbird seat. And the U.S. keeps trying. You know, the Anglo-American Alliance has spent 100 years getting in the middle of that to make sure that the world doesn't get together without them. They control the sea lanes. You know, for a long time, they controlled the satellites until 2012 when Russia got theirs or got the, you know, the global GPS system. So there's a real fight to maintain that control. And, you know, if you think the Anglo-American Alliance might not do something really stupid and a fight might start, it could happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't see a real conflict breaking out in Ukraine.
I think it's unlikely, but I still think it could happen.
Wow.
And I don't think it would be a real fight. I think it would be an economic war. I think it would fight out through the derivatives, through the dollar, through the gas supply. You know, it would be an economic war. It wouldn't be a nuclear war. It wouldn't be a physical war.
Interesting. If that happens, Boy, that's a dangerous game to play.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but if you think, if we're moving missiles close enough for the Russians to think we have first strike capacity,
yeah,
would they tank the derivative market? Absolutely. They would do it. I would do it.
The U.S. is, either way, no matter how you look at this, the power structure in the U.S. is playing with fire.
Right. Yep.
No. Yep. All right. Next story. I don't know how to read this one. From Russia Today, RT, fourth Mossad commander resigns in under a year, according to the media. Zoom in. The fourth high-profile official to leave Mossad in 7 months since David Barnea became the director of the Israeli intelligence agency last June. Okay? Barnea, just claimed to fame so far, but he singled out Iran as its top priority, accusing the country of making constant progress toward a weapon of mass destruction. Our security challenges are very big, and at the top of the list is Iran, he said. So I don't know whether that's connected to the four resignations or not. It sort of seems like the RT writer thinks so. Sort of like the cameraman watches a certain horse right after a, you know, like, well, why are you looking at that?
So if you look, Israel is much more powerful in compromising security systems and IT systems globally than any most people realize. And it's very powerful inside of NATO. And of course, there's a huge lobby to start a war with Iran. And given what's going on now in the Ukraine and the Middle East, I find this, I don't understand what's happening in the Mossad, but to me, it has to be important. And so I wanted to cover this story, not because I know what it means, but because I know it's important. And I'd love to find out what it means. So I'm inviting everybody to, you know, who's listening to this, who may know, let's figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And what's going on in Israel, I got to tell you, Israel's got to be one of the worst places to be right now.
If the vaccination figures are true, that would certainly be the case.
Right. Right.
And they were, in fact, injected with those poisons coming from these pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
It couldn't be good.
Right. The sickness in Israel is off the charts. And in fact, by sharing their data widely globally, I think they've saved a lot of pain in other countries. So, you know, I got to give credit to the people in Israel. They've been doing everything they can to help people globally learn from their misery. But it's horrible to watch what's happening to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, let's find out why four officers suddenly resigning from Mossad.
Right.
Well, what's going on there? Okay, shifting gears to FedWatch. A lot of stories like this, but biometric. This is from biometricupdate.com, sort of like oilprice.com, very focused. Biometric consumer gadgets, neat, but key growth areas tied to banks, autos, government. That's kind of an unholy trinity there.
This is the control grid squeezing into place.
For sure. Now, this concerns numerous products with biometrics integrated for security and convenience. I want to make a note of that. Convenience. It's for your convenience. Whenever it's for your convenience, it isn't. We're on display last week at CES. I looked this up. CES is a big biometric consumer product conference. It's annual. It's going to be held in Las Vegas this year, it turns out. Swipe and fingerprint cards were each in the headlines this week with votes of confidence for their biometric payment card technologies. Tata Consulting. Tata is the biggest car manufacturer in India. Tata Consulting picking up $1 billion passport biometrics deal. Clearview AI securing another foothold with U.S. law enforcement. This is just all bad, all of this stuff going on. All of these products, you're
and
exactly
it's,
right.
It's very quiet. It's very quiet. The control grid is quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back and look at one thing in the story. I thought I'd highlight it, but I hadn't. But I see it. Here we go. Infrastructure support for social credit systems, okay, include biometrics as a small piece. China is the leader in both demand and research, but who else is buying? Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard.
Apparently. Oh, wow. Wow. Say that again?
Yep, look at that.
China. I can't see it. I don't see your screen.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me get back to this. Okay. Infrastructure support. We're at this paragraph in here. Infrastructure to support social credit systems, which includes biometrics as a small piece, are forecast to be a $16.1 billion global market within 3 years.
Oh, wow.
China is the leader in both demand and research. But who else is buying? Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard, apparently. Wow. Didn't see that coming.
Gruesome. Yep.
That's surprising. You know, Iran is the one, it's one of those countries that's a thorn in the U.S. side because it won't really get on board with debt-based monetary system.
Right.
You know, other thorns in the side were like, they had names like Libya. You know, Iran's a... So to see this, where it's like, well, you're against debt-based money, but you're okay with biometric identification?
Right.
I don't know.
Remember, one of the problems, because a couple times I've met with people from Iran, you know, and sort of got a briefing what's going on internally. When you're paranoid about outside influences and what they may do, then you want more control of your population. So external competition sometimes forces a desire for that control.
Yeah, right, right. You kind of have to meet your opponent in a perverse way. Anyway, that's noteworthy to me. Okay, also biometrics, next story. IRS to require facial recognitions to view tax returns. IRS has partnered with a Virginia-based private identification firm which requires a facial recognition selfie, among other things, in order to create or access online accounts with the agency. The IRS announced that by summer, so this summer, in 6 months, the only way to log into IRS.gov will be through ID.me, ID.me, founded by former Army Rangers, i.e. the CIA, in 2010. The McLean-based company has evolved to providing online ID verification services, which several states are using to help reduce unemployment and pandemic related fraud. They're here to help you. They're just here to help reduce fraud. That's what we're all about.
I just confirmed with our CPA that we can file paper this year. So we're going to all paper filing, no more online filing with the IRS.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yep. Yep.
I know an accountant who tells me that IRS offices now are kind of like a ghost town. It's very hard to get a hold of.
I think a lot of government offices are a ghost town. That's part of moving control to the corporations and the banks. I will say this. I feel a little bit of sympathy with the IRS because if you look at the pain that they have experienced from fraudulent filings to get tax returns, it's been a real nightmare for them. And it's a pretty frightening experience to deal with. And you almost wonder who was... I don't know if you know this, but I had a business partner who was due a huge refund. I mean, it was big. And he filed to get it, only to discover some fraudster had filed ahead of him and gotten his check.
No.
And it took a significant amount of time for him to get it fixed. And, you know, it's kind of an identity theft going after your tax refund. And it happens much more than you think. It's a much bigger problem. So I understand why the IRS might want to do something like this.
Yeah.
It's not completely about, you know, just selfish control.
They've got plausible deniability galore.
Yeah, it's probably the intelligence agencies grabbing the money.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
Right. Two birds with one stone.
Right.
Right. Give us some cash and provide the impetus for more control to us.
There you go. That's how they do it. It's did you ever see W.C. Fields with the snake and the snake potion?
No.
You know, he carries a flask of liquor to serve as a snake potion, which he drinks, you know, when he gets bitten by the snake, he also carries with him. It's an old joke. Okay. Okay,
that's
keep
great.
Going.
Okay, let's keep going. Arizona governor sues Biden administration over attempt to wrest back federal funds. This is a good one. because it's just illustrative of what goes on. The U.S. Treasury Department threatened arrest funds from Arizona because state officials have made distribution of the money contingent on not requiring masks. So Arizona's like, you know, if you want our money, you can't be mandating mask businesses. Our Treasury says no to that. Failure to change the rules may result in Treasury moving to recoup the funds and withhold future funds. But Congress, which authorized the funding with the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, gives states, quote, broad latitude to choose whether and how to use the money and to respond and address the negative impact of COVID-19. Now, I bring attention to that because that's Congress, okay?
Right.
Congress, that's a law. Now, look at this. The Treasury earlier this month issued a final rule for the $350 billion in funds that barred states and other recipients of the money from imposing terms or conditions that undermine efforts to stop the spread of COVID-19. Congress could have done that, but Congress didn't do that, okay?
Right.
This is an agency, namely the Treasury, writing legislation, right? They are taking that. This is completely beyond the pale. That is, there's no way does that pass constitutional muster.
Nope.
But that's what's going on.
That's what's going on. It goes on at every agency every day. I've watched it.
Exactly.
Right.
And yet people will sit there with a straight face and deny that there's a deep state. It's staring you in the face in stories like this.
Right.
Right. Agencies are writing law. They're the ones who are implementing the control, not Congress.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite example, of course, is FASB's Statement 56.
Yeah.
You write an administrative policy, which is not even a regulation, because that reg went through a reg process. So you're writing an administrative policy that says we don't have to obey the Constitution, we don't have to obey the financial management laws, and we don't have to obey the financial regulations, but we're going to do that.
Right, right. let's just change. This next story we could have slotted either way, as we discussed. It's still in FedWatch. It concerns crypto. And this is the Biden administration sees crypto regulation as a matter of national security. There's going to be forthcoming executive order will reportedly task federal agencies with formulating holistic crypto regulations. Now, the story makes it clear that the Biden administration has no idea what it's doing. It just wants to control. The executive order is expected within weeks. The order is going to develop a set of policies to give coherency to what the government is trying to do in this space, so it doesn't have a clue. The White House has no plans to issue recommendations of its own, but rather would require for government agencies to put forth their own proposals for which the White House would synthesize and bring together. The White House just wants to be the boss. Many parts of the government, the agencies that are going to be involved in this are the State Department, Treasury Department, Councils of Economic Advisors, National Economic Council, and the White House National Security Council. Notably absent from that list is the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. I don't see them anywhere in that list.
Well, because they're not part of government.
The Board of Governors most certainly is part of the government.
No, it's that not.
Yes, it is. Yep. The head of the Board of Governors, it's the regional Federal Reserve banks that aren't part of government.
Right. Right.
The Board of Governors is what gives the Fed its gloss of legitimacy as a government agency. The Fed chairman is appointed, of the head of the Board of Governors is appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate.
But the Board of Governors is not authorized to speak for those 12 banks. So it can't put out anything, especially because it just put out a white paper on CBDCs.
Right. But it's odd that you don't see the Board of Governors in that list.
Oh, because you would never, when it's phrased that way, you would never see the Board of Governors. They're always considered separate. In other words,
they're considered an independent agency.
Right. Okay, so let me tell you part of what I'm reading in this. You have, I said to you yesterday, you have over 50 divisions, sub-agencies or agencies which have the power to make arrests and wear guns. So they're licensed to carry guns and make arrests.
Right.
The last time I looked, I haven't looked recently. When you go out to every agency conceivably affected. So HUD, which runs the whole mortgage market, okay? And you invite them to give you everything they want in cryptocurrency. Do you have any idea the tsunami you're going to get?
Yeah, I imagine it would be quite enormous.
Yeah. And do you have any idea how difficult it would be to reconcile all those demands into one package?
Yeah, it's an organizational headache to be sure, but
well, but they're saying they can do it by February. That's impossible unless they've already done it. No. I mean, if they've been doing it over the last 2 years, they could do it. But there's no way they can invite this tsunami in and reconcile it and produce a package in a month. Unless the deep state already wrote it for them. That's
In other words, it's already written.
Right.
And it's this is just to provide cover for the vector to get the deep state proposal in is through Biden.
Right. So it's but sitting it's sitting in the safe at Battelle and Arnold and Porter. And then like the Patriot Act, it's delivered.
Right.
Right.
So and the vector is going to be the White House.
Right.
That's how I would read that story. I think that's probably the most accurate. But we'll see. You know, the Fed promised that paper for almost a year, and we finally got it. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Right.
Anyway, okay. Next story. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one because it's just unsourced from Cairns News. I don't know them. Anyway, UK developing the mother of all national ID cards under the guise of COVID. UK is developing the most stringent ID card in the world, making China's social credit system resemble a Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale. UK government says it will send this information to the World Health Organization data bank, aka the New World Order headquarters. I don't doubt any of that, but there's no sourcing there at all. So what do you make of that story?
So I wanted to put this story in because they suddenly sort of backed down on vaccine passports, and you could tell the plan B was coming. And at the same time the UK did this, Van der Leyen came out and said, oh, we're not going to push the vaccine passports. We're going to have digital private ID wallets, something like that. Yeah. And so you could tell the marketing has now morphed. And it's going more towards ID and wallets. And this is what I meant by the control grid growing pains. They're you know, they're trying to figure out how to get this done without setting off the firestorm, because the firestorm here against passports in Europe has been incredible. I mean, people are out in the street in hundreds of thousands.
Right. And we will see that momentarily.
Right.
Yeah. Got a video on that. Okay. You ready for the next story from your favorite people? You sure? Okay.
Yeah.
What we learned at the Davos Agenda, a podcast roundup from Radio Davos. Now, I want to zoom in on this. Look at this. Here's everybody's favorite, you know, chew toy, Klaus, talking to the U.S. Treasury Secretary, you know. Anyway, I'll tell you what this story reminds me of. This is just, okay, so you can see here, episode transcript. So this interviewer, Robin Pomeroy, goes through and interviews all these people, like the heavy hitters of the globalist agenda. Matthias Maurer is an astronaut. Okay, this reminds me, this interview. You ever see the beauty contests where they interview the pageant?
Yeah.
The contestants? And they're like, well, what do you think we ought to do about inequality? And they're like, well, I think that, you know, rich people should be more giving and poor people should work hard, you know?
Yeah.
That's this story, okay? So everybody gets their little soundbite to advance the globalist agenda. Let's hit it. Okay, Matthias Maurer, we got to fight climate change. Let me back out. Let me hit that zoom again. Okay. Klaus Schwab, he's here for net zero and knowing the gap between rich and poor. I think it probably means closing the gap. Transcript's got some issues. We got Antonio Guterres. He is the Secretary General of the UN. Rising inflation and looming debt traps. That's his soundbite. Here we go. Kristalina, we're concerned with inflation and record high debt levels. Lagarde, energy prices and weather related. Yellen, concerned about that inflation. And then this guy here, he didn't learn his lines too well. He's too blunt. I don't think inflation will be transitory at all. Okay. And then this guy, this idiot, Bill Gates, keep in mind, this is a sanitized transcript. This isn't a courtroom transcript that gets all the uhs and ahs, uh-huh. which is filled with dashes and everything. Here's Bill Gates. Sanitized transcript. Let's take a look. In the end, it really does come down to economics. The dirty way of making things is very mature. You know, whether it's steel or cement or aviation. And we have to, you know, make it far more economic. What an idiot. Anyway, that's Davos. It's all the cheerleaders so getting together.
I did have to say, the first 5 minutes of watching Schwab and Yellen, I tried to watch it. I couldn't finish it. But I was shocked because, first of all, this guy really does look like Blofeld in Goldfinger. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And he's like a caricature of himself. And he's so obsequious and unctuous. And Yellen is just eating it up. And she's just, you know, he's spoon-feeding her. And she's loving it. And I'm thinking, this is the American Secretary of the Treasury who's responsible for the $30 trillion plus Treasury market, sucking up to a guy who's proposing to destroy all private property. Yeah. Does that not strike you as strange?
The optics there, I don't think are accidental.
No, of course not.
That it's the U.S. Treasury. The U.S. Treasury, that's a cabinet position. That's a very important position. Like answering, even having a conversation with a clown like Schwab is just, I think the optics are terrible. I think they're deliberate. It's like, do you see the Fed talking to Schwab? Not in a million years do you see that. You know, same way. Do you see Fed officials getting trapped with Jeffrey Epstein? No, you don't. It's dope heads like, you know, Bill Gates and Larry Summers. It's just the idiots at the top. You don't see any, you'd never see Palantir anywhere near, right. or Geithner anywhere right. near those guys.
But it is true that they are increasingly, this is your expression, which I love, they increasingly putting up chew toys. I used to call them puppets, but they're putting up chew toys, and Schwab is headed towards chew toy number one.
Yeah. So chew toys is my term for the powers that be throw out a chew toy for us people, the dogs, snarl, and get angry at it. And we waste all our energy on the chew toy.
Right.
And we never bother looking at the person who threw the toy.
Well, not only that, we never look at the control grid that's slowly snapping into place while we're hitting the chew.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Too busy, you know, griping about the chew toy. And I go for it too. I want to punch Bill Gates in the face, you know, but I got to take a
no,
step back.
No, I don't. I want to get sticky fingers unnominated for control of the currency. And that did work. So
yeah. It does work. But anyway, okay. Let's change gears. CBDC and crypto. Ready?
Big story. That is the big story. CBDC and crypto are the big story this year.
Yeah, EU regulator wants to ban energy-intensive Bitcoin mining. Ruh-roh. The EU should ban a form of Bitcoin mining that uses up excessive amounts of energy because it poses a threat to the continent's climate goals, according to one of the bloc's top financial regulators. I will tell you, Catherine, we predicted this well over a year ago.
Yeah, but here's why. It's got nothing to do with climate change. If the Russians cut off the gas.
Of course not.
People are going to be dying because they don't have gas. Okay, so you can't have people dying while while Bitcoin is using up an equivalent amount of energy as Germany or Switzerland.
Yeah.
Right?
They've already got an alternative. Okay, so let's get back into the story. So the EU should weigh a ban on so-called proof of work mining, that's Bitcoin, in favor of the more energy efficient proof of stake. So proof of stake mining entails miners pledging to put up a stake of digital coins before they can validate transactions. So there's already other cryptocurrencies that they've got waiting in the wings. This is an interesting fact too. Look at this. US recently overtook China as the world's hub of digital currency mining.
Well, China cracked down. So China was China cracked down. The regulators threw them out. But here's what's happening, because you know my expression, the Midianite thing, where people turn against each other. We're watching two wars emerge. One war is CBDC and the central bank digital currency versus private digital currency. But the other war is Bitcoin versus all the other private cryptos. So there is tension in control grid space, you know, and it's going to get fierce. It's just beginning.
Yeah. That's yeah. Anyway, interesting story. So the gloves have kind of started to come off with we saw it coming. It's
right.
Like, you know, you're taking a lot of energy that we've got climate change, global warming in the offing, and you're burning up all this energy. I mean, when are these two things going to collide? Now they're colliding.
Well, but here's the other thing is when you take new technology and you prototype it, you know, people are free to rock and roll. So if you look at the standard financial regulation that applies to any use of money by retail savers or investors, that has never been applied to crypto. They've been allowed to swim free without it. It's been the Wild West. And that Yes. whole world has no idea of what that regulation looks like. And the day it comes down and the doors and the windows lock, they're in for a shocking, you know, they just have absolutely no idea. And so
they're walking in. Right.
Right. But it's inevitable that it's going to happen. I mean, look at the drop from 67,000 on Bitcoin to, I don't know what the low was, but in the 30s, you know, if you talk to retail investors who have very little money, you know, retail savers into buying at 65,000 and then they drop 40 to 45%, you know, in a matter of from November, you know, in 3 months. And you haven't warned them that could happen?
Yeah.
You know, in the securities industry, people go to jail for that. So.
Yeah.
Or they used to. That,
I think that's right what you're saying. I mean, right. there's a lot of hubris based on the run-up in price in the crypto. And it's just setting them up for, you know, you're walking into a buzzsaw.
Yeah, they are walking into a buzzsaw. And you know something? Yeah. There are a lot of wonderful people in that world, and they don't know. They really don't know.
No, they don't. They're going to, right. It's right. going to be, I think it's going to be a life-changing experience for a lot of them in a very bad way. Just to be, I've been hit in the back of the head with a 2x4.
Right.
I mean, not literally, but like we're talking about here, where something happens. It's like, not in a million years that I see that coming.
So
it takes a while to recover.
Mercola asked me if I would do a debate with somebody representing Bitcoin. And we just recorded it. His guy sent me sort of part of the transcript because they write up the discussion. And he said it was 3 hours. I thought it was 2 hours and 15 minutes. But for all I know, it went on and on and on. It was unbelievable. And they're going to publish it, I think, Sunday. And then I'm going to do another couple of interviews. I did a speech last week at the Greater Reset 3 on what is it that makes a currency work? What's important to know if you're going to design a currency, including a local currency? So currency is on everybody's mind, and it's becoming a popular topic. And what I keep trying to hammer, and I think we have to keep hammering, is whatever you do, you don't want an all-digital financial system, because that is the control grid.
Right. You got it for sure.
Right. And so which is the more efficient digital mechanism, to me, is a secondary question. The primary question is we have to stop the 100% digital financial system or we're toast.
Yes.
Right.
Totally agreed. It's right. A matter of time once it's all digital before they got you.
Right.
You know, there's a, you know, whatever, 4,500 commercial banks. You can't control them all now, but that's coming.
Right.
It's not going
exactly.
to not going to take that long. Okay.
Exactly.
The next story, this isn't really a story. This is the long-awaited paper from the Fed on CBDC. And I'm right on the Federal Reserve website there. Money and payments to U.S. dollar in the age of digital transformation. There's not a lot of groundbreaking stuff here, but I wanted to go to a couple of things that I found interesting, and I was waiting on this.
Well, they made it very clear they're going for legislation. You said they would, but they made it very clear they will.
Powell's always taken that position. Look at this, though. This is a question I had for a long time. As a liability of the Federal Reserve, a central bank digital currency would not require mechanisms like deposit insurance to maintain public confidence? Okay, yeah, of course not, because the Fed is backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S., and the banks right. that issue their money are not. That's why you need deposit insurance.
Right.
Okay, that part I knew. This part is what kind of got me, because I've been asking this for a long time. Nor would a CBDC depend on backing, buying underlying asset pool to maintain its value. Really? You're going to issue a liability with no corresponding asset? I find that astonishing. I don't think that's true. But that's a very interesting thing, because if that's right, okay, if you have a liability on one side and there's no asset on the other side,
you don't need an asset because you have complete control. That's your asset.
That's one way of looking at it. But that's a really weird thing. Okay.
Well, now, how are they going to treat it on the balance sheet?
That's what I mean. Like, right. Well, if you don't have, are you going to have negative equity? Anyway, I just don't see how they're going to work that.
Here's the other thing they make clear is they're not cutting out the banks.
Yeah.
I told you the banks are going to do customer support.
I'm looking for this. Oh, here's another one. Next page. We knew that CBDC could potentially be programmed, for example, to deliver payments at certain times. So they're not, you know, they're telling you it's going to be programmable. They're right. trying to suggest that it's going to be this. Anyway, they go on and on. Somewhere in here, they say, and this is simply not the case. They say in this paper that banks need deposits to make loans. It's like, no, they don't. They have, and you know that, Fed. I mean, why is that bit of misinformation in there?
So that's what they're grappling with. What are the banks going to do if they can't issue CBDC? They're not going to delegate the issuance to them, just the customer support.
Yeah, I mean, other than little, you know, anomalies like that in the paper, though, there's really not a lot. There's no groundbreaking stuff in that paper.
No, but I have to give them credit. I thought they did a really smooth job.
Yeah,
whatever they've been battling out for a year, they got it down to the point where it was, you know, it's very Powell-like. It's designed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is Powell. Yeah, they have designed to fall, you know, it is as frictionless as they can get it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So the banks won't be offended. Congress won't be offended. Now, here's what I want to point out to you that's very important for you to understand on the timing of this. Powell did not issue this until the Republicans were significantly ahead in the polls. Hmm. Significantly. And, you know, if things go the way they expect, the Republicans are going to take back both the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
You watch. They're certainly going to have the Senate, but I think they take the House too. And you're right. going to have a Republican landslide. I think a lot of those liability issues could swing because they're going to start doing investigations. But that means when Powell goes for legislation, he's betting he's going to have a Republican Congress.
Yeah.
So
that's a very interesting read on that.
Right.
But he also says in this, reminds me of another comment in this paper, which wasn't Powell before said, you know, we're going to need authorizing legislation from Congress. This paper says, the new paper, we need authorizing legislation and support from the White House, which I thought was, Powell didn't say that before, but that's an interesting thing.
He said it. I don't think he means it.
That's the paper. The paper says that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I know. The paper says that because you don't want to offend them. But
right.
Where Powell's going to get his support is from Gensler at SEC.
Yeah. But that's not executive branch.
No. Well, Gensler probably has a strong voice within the administration, but, especially my guess is he's probably got a pretty good relationship with Yellen. But, tension there is going to be the same thing we're watching in Russia between the CBDC and the private crypto. And that's where we're going to see the tension between the administration and the central bank, just like we do in Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's hit the next story.
Okay.
This is again CBDC and crypto. UK government opens consultation on medic style register for Brit InfoSec pros. Okay. We'll get the InfoSec. You can see here in the blue highlight, practitioners, meaning security specialists. It's their term. Frustrated. So back to the story. Frustrated at lack of activity from the standard setting UK Cybersecurity Council. The government wants to pass new laws, making it into the statutory regulator of the UK InfoSec trade. The proposed setup sounds very similar to the General Medical Council and its register of doctors allowed to practice medicine in the US. So they're talking about, you know, just coming out and saying, you got to be a member of our cybersecurity group for you to make a living.
So I'm going to say this 1,000 times this year. The way you control crypto or any financial product is not through the technology and not through the hardware and not through the software. You control the people. And yep. This is a perfect example. If you look at what Australia is doing now, or you look what the UK is doing, they're getting ready for 100% control through the people. And this is a perfect example.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the Russia story. Russian authorities drop roadmap to regulate cryptocurrencies, according to a document. This is kind of an interesting story.
It is.
Russian authorities have drawn up a roadmap that envisages restrictions on cryptocurrencies, but not a complete ban on trading and mining as advocated by the central bank, a document seen by Reuters showed on Friday. President Vladimir Putin has asked those involved to find a consensus and a working group, including the finance, economy, digital, interior ministries, FSB Security Service, and the central bank has been working on such a plan. Deputy Minister Chernyshenko has signed the roadmap, according to the document. And the article says, you know, it's the regulatory drift here. There's a rift among the regulators. Again, it's the central bank and the government. The working group's proposal would allow for the buying and selling of cryptocurrencies to be provided exclusively by Russian banking organizations. It proposes creating procedures to block foreign crypto exchanges from offering services to users in Russia, but suggests foreign platforms could obtain licenses to operate in the country. So a lot of moving parts in this story, but what do you make of that? What's going on there?
So there are a couple things here that are interesting. To me, the most interesting is we see the same process happen in the US and Russia exactly at the same time.
Right.
Now, it could relate to the fact that they, you know, look like they're approaching much more intense economic warfare, including economic nuclear warfare. So it could be that they both have to resolve this as part of that. But anyway, so I find it very interesting. But the second thing is it's exactly what you and I have been talking about, which is you can end up with a system where CBDC crowds out all the private crypto, including Bitcoin, or you can let the private guys thrive and coexist, or you can just squeeze them down with regulatory and things that stop their liquidity. So it's a marginal market controlled by the banks. There's several ways to go here. And, you know, in November, the crypto market topped at $3 trillion. Now it's down to maybe $1.5 trillion somewhere. You know, it's cut in half, but that's still a lot of money, John. And the reality is a lot of that money could absolutely, well, the prices could get squeezed out and money could come out, you know. So that's a bubble. And the question is, will the bubble be allowed to exist or will it be regulated and squeezed down? And we don't know.
Yeah.
And what one, you know, what Russia or China do impacts what we do. It's like a Pillsbury Doughboy and you squeeze on the, you know, the bottom and it pops out on the top. So
Pillsbury Doughboy doesn't do that. A balloon does that.
Well, but you squeeze.
I have a Pillsbury Doughboy.
You do? No. I just saw the ads, but it worked in the ads, you know, but could they have been lying to me, John? Right. So in China squeezes down and the United States gets bigger, right?
Yeah. That's how money works.
Right.
Money flows. That's how they work.
Right.
You push money into one pipe, it's coming out of another pipe somewhere. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
That's just how money doesn't vanish. You know, there's a big misconception about that. Like, oh, the money.
Oh, yeah, because the $21 trillion is someplace.
somewhere.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, back to the White House on this White House version of the Russia story. White House, and we saw this earlier, but this is another take. White House is set to put itself at the center of U.S. crypto policy. The Biden administration is preparing to release an initial government-wide strategy for digital assets as soon as next month. Probably not going to happen. And task federal agencies with assessing the risk and opportunities they pose, according to people familiar with the matter. Federal agencies have taken a scattershot approach to digital assets. So that's sort of like, you know, in the Russian story, we saw the rift. Mm-hmm. Here we're seeing it's a scattershot. There's disagreement. And the executive is stepping in to the breach in both of these stories and trying to unite and say, you know, we're going to be the uniter. We know there's a bunch of different fiefdoms that are battling each other. We're going to synthesize, right?
So I think the chances that there's somebody at the White House capable of doing that is less than 1%. So I'm assuming, you know, the document's over at Arnold and Porter and they're just planning on popping it out.
Yeah, right. But that was what we said earlier. Is that, yeah,
I know, but as you were saying that, the thought of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris sitting around and resolving that tsunami of material, complex material is...
That's almost, it's comical.
Yeah, it's like crypto idiocracy.
Yeah, this is not going to happen in a million years. Let's go to our last story in CBDC and crypto. This is just sort of a human interest story to me. Wall Street Journal. Look at this. Look at that. That's a nice pad right there, isn't it? Anyway, the story is crypto kings are the real estate industry's newest whales. And it starts with this guy, Ryan Serhant. He's a real estate agent. He received an offer last fall for one of his listings, a $25 million downtown Manhattan apartment. So he's happy he gets this offer, but he's dubious. Wary that the offer was a hoax, Mr. Serhant asked for proof of funds and was stunned by what he received. A statement of the buyer's cryptocurrency holdings worth around $600 million. It was crazy, he said. So this guy, he gets the offer and he looks around and he says, you know, I don't really think this is credible. This guy is not from Wall Street. He's not from a prominent family. It's not for real. And it turns out he's a cryptocurrency holder, $600 million, and he can't believe it. And that's really the story the Wall Street Journal's got here of these guys. The crypto rich are the new whales in the luxury residential market, and the industry is taking notice. Real estate developers are jumping through hoops to accept crypto. And that's kind of the upshot, is they, you know, it's gone mainstream when you can buy houses with crypto, kind of where that's headed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I think there are a tremendous number. I think there's billions of dollars in crypto that has tax liabilities that would rather not, you know, find themselves in front of the IRS on an audit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, or you have huge profits. And now is the time, if you have tax liabilities you don't want to deal to donate that money. You know, get it donated now or get it into real assets. You know, because you've been in a speculative bubble, you've won. Get it real or get it gone. You know, enough so that you're playing from your winnings when and if the bubble squeezes or gets popped. Now,
that's the easiest strategy.
Right. And I've had people argue that the market is going much higher. And I can give you scenarios where crypto prices are going to go much, much higher. That's possible. But for God's sakes, get your capital out and get it into something real. And if you have tax liabilities, get it gone.
Yeah. Because if the door closes, you're not getting through.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So out of that 1.2, let's say the crypto market today is 1.5. In the next year, how much of that $1.5 trillion do you think could get out if it wanted to?
Five percent.
There you go. There you go.
Ballpark.
We're not talking about a lot of liquidity here.
Yeah, yeah. If 5% works for Neil Kashkari, that's how he came up with the $700 billion TARP. It was 5% of the then $14 trillion US GDP. It works for me too. That's what you're going to get out of your crypto. is 5%. So sell 95%. Get out.
Well, I'm just saying, be careful. Okay. Yeah. I don't. Okay. We don't give sell recommendations on the Slater report.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I am certainly not an investment advisor. I'm almost not a lawyer anymore.
Well, but here's the thing. How do you, in a market that is moving to technocracy and is 100% controlled and manipulated, how can you advise related to investments? It's all politics.
That's the thing. You know, I've been railing about this for 10 years. Without the rule of law, yeah, you're at your captor's mercy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? There is no valuation.
Right. It's all politics.
Does market depend on rules? Yeah.
Well, that's why for the annual wrap up, our theme was sovereignty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're writing it.
Yep. Yep. That I am. Okay. Let's go to pushback and take a look. This is sort of a, around the world in 30 seconds. In positive news, this is all the pushback around the world. Austria postpones vaccine mandates until April. Germany drops the idea of vaccine mandates, which I don't really understand. Spain wants to rely on natural immunity, classified COVID as flu. That's good. England, life is back to normal without a pass and without masks. Denmark, all measures expire. Czechoslovakia, the idea of vaccine mandates is abolished. Even the World Health Organization opposes repeated booster shots, and it goes on and on and on. Down to India has brought COVID-19 under control by stopping vaccination and distributing a free medicinal treatment kit, including ivermectin.
My favorite one is in Quebec when the health minister came out and said they were going to require a third dose.
Yeah.
Jordan Peterson, who felt betrayed on the vaccinations, came out and called him a scum rat.
Yeah, right.
Publicly, and then had to resign from the university. And and then the truckers happened. So that was it for the Quebec minister.
Yeah, that was all she wrote, right? Okay, let's go to Brussels, okay, and the protest here. What we've got here is a drone shot, that's the big shot, and then the inset is the ground shot, and they're synchronized. And you can see, for example, that this biker here, the big shot, is over in the drone shot, is here on the handheld shot. So this is totally synchronized. Typically, drones do not have audio. This has got audio. It's coming from the camera on the ground. Anyway, here we go. This is... Can you hear that?
Yep.
Okay. Wow.
Yep, hundreds of thousands of people.
Wow. Just on and on. And notice that this is sped up, right?
Right.
That's a sped up shot. This video goes on for over 5 minutes. You know, there'll be a link in the show notes or whatever. You can see this video. It just goes on and on and on, and it's accelerating. It's hundreds of thousands of people.
It's hundreds of thousands. They were hoping for 500,000. I don't know if they got them or not. But essentially, you know, there was a fake provocateur, and then the police broke it up. And no one got to make their speeches. So we had a press conference in the morning. Then we went to lunch, and then we were on our way to, to give the speeches. And right before we got there, they basically, faked provocation and then shut it down. So with tear gas and water cannons. And we never got to make, we went back to the restaurant and gave the speeches from the restaurant.
Wow.
Yeah. And
that's kind of astonishing that a protest of that size can be shut down.
Well, what was interesting is right when that happened, suddenly they backed down on the passports and start talking about the digital ID wallet, a remarketing. Mm. And it happened both in the EU and the UK. And one of the things you could feel was, when the employee mandate fell in the United States, that had a big hit. You know, it really turned the momentum in Europe because they could feel, uh-oh, you know, it's in trouble there. And then the pushback, the protests in Italy, the protests in France, the protests then in Brussels, you know, people are really pushing back. And, you know, it's for many reasons, but they are very, very clear they do not want a control grid. You know, a lot of the European Union being created was you're free to travel within the Schengen area. That was a big push. And over Brexit, you know, the free to travel in the Schengen area was a big push. So suddenly these passports coming in Europe is it's a very big deal.
You see a lot more pushback in Europe than you do in the U.S. Yep.
Well, you know, I hate to say this, the relationship between the governments and the people is traditionally much more positive and much more intimate than it is in the United States. And I would say there's a lot less fear here of the government. And, you know, in the United States, I can see a policeman or a trooper every 5 minutes. In many other countries in the world, you go for days without seeing a policeman or a trooper or a law enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, so the U.S. from a personnel and money standpoint has a police state. So I think people are a lot less cowed in Europe from what I've seen.
Boy, it really is a police. I live near a town of 10,000 people.
Right.
You know, 10 miles away. They got 32 police cruisers.
Well, you know, I'll never forget being in Sydney about 4 or 5 years ago. I was there for 6 days driving in and out of Sydney. Now, in Sydney, I think 40% of the population, John, is not from Australia. They're immigrants. You know, you've got a lot of Chinese. You've got a lot of Indians. You've got, you know, it's a melting pot. And it's 5 million people. It's a real business juggernaut. I was driving in and out of Sydney in all the densest areas all over Sydney for 6 days straight, taking the ferry, going to the opera. Before I even saw a policeman, I saw two policemen come into the mall to have lunch near where I was lunching. You know, it just felt like the whole population was self-policing, whereas you're right, in a rural county in Tennessee, In that same period, I would have seen hundreds of policemen and troopers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, all over the place.
The war on drugs and the war on poverty, then the war on drugs, and then the war on terror has significantly over law enforced. I told you when I left Washington, when I was doing the Dylan Reed book, there were 50 plus agencies with the power to arrest and carry guns when I did the research.
Wow.
What is that?
Yeah, right.
Right, and remember, they seize assets. I've never heard of anybody in Europe getting their assets seized. And it's happening to people, you know, everybody knows if you have cash in the car and you get stopped on the highway, they could take your cash.
It's open season.
Yeah,
right. Okay, more pushback. This from UK. I confess, I don't really understand how this works, but here we go. UK Vaccine Crime Investigation, Metropolitan Police and International Criminal Court, ICC. So we have Metropolitan Police Crime Number. There's a case number there. The case was lodged. Let me try to get that centered. There we go. The case was lodged on December 20th by Sam White, MD, Philip Highland, lawyer, and Lois Bayless, a lawyer, looks like, and retired policeman Mark Sexton. The evidence submitted by Highland and White against UK's medicines and healthcare products regulatory agencies is damning and shows they did not carry out due diligence surrounding the vaccine data, trials, and studies, and that they continue to ignore the death, harm, injury the vaccine caused. Sexton, who's one of the principals in the case, this is the most far-reaching criminal inquiry ever undertaken. So it looks like they're going after people, but I can't make sense of what court this is.
So I don't understand this, but I've had it explained to me, but I really still don't understand it. But I think this is a very important development, and I think it's very significant. Sam White and Philip Highland are very recommended or very respected Sam White is a doctor who tried to deal responsibly with the problem with the vaccine and basically ended up with a squabble with the regulators. And he's been part of the Doctors for COVID Ethics. So he's a very respected, serious young doctor. And what they've done is they filed this lawsuit in the international courts. And then what they are doing under UK law, a citizen can walk into a police station and request a criminal investigation. And I suspect part of what's happening is you have police throughout the country who are sympathetic. And what this process of citizens filing complaints is backed up by the international case to the extent that White and his team have created a significant package of evidence. You know, normally citizens, when they walk in and file a criminal complaint, do not have a professional, impressive package right. of evidence. This time they do. And it's significant, right. I'm told. I haven't looked at it. And so if you get, apparently now they've got scores and scores of citizens walking into the local police office saying, we want you to do a criminal investigation of the local vaccine center. We want you to shut down the local vaccine center. And if you get enough citizens doing this and the evidence is really impressive, then apparently under UK law, you can get something going. Now, one of the things I'd love to hear is whether other countries can do this. And it depends on the law, right. you know, in different jurisdictions. But I'm hoping this will snowball.
Also in Europe, yeah, there's EU law, which applies to all the countries, as I understand it. But whether the EU law allows for that, I kind of doubt.
It's unlikely. In this, yeah. I'm told in this respect, the UK is special. But then the question is, are other countries under the Commonwealth appropriate as well? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, your light is fading, but we're going to muscle through. Okay. All right. Next story and pushback from North Dakota Attorney General Stenum. I'm just going to call him that.
So this one is last fall.
Yeah. So if you look at that date there, right, October 29, 2021, today, Attorney General Lane Stenum joined a lawsuit against the Biden administration for the vaccine mandates for federal contractors and contracted employees. As I said before, Stenum said, I am pro-vaccination, but I am also pro-states' rights and opposed to federal overreach. The mandate in Executive Order 14042 is both contrary to federal law and unconstitutional. And then you have joining him really a total of 10 other states.
Right.
That was, as we said, October 29, 2021. Pushback big time there against the Biden administration. And then not much later, we see, sad story, sudden passing, Wayne Stenum dead at 68, North Dakota AG passes away unexpectedly as a kind lawmaker and is mourned. This is from The Sun in the UK, not from the US.
So I find this very disturbing because the AGs are one of the most important PowerPoints that can stand up to the federal government. With the Biden yep. administration losing the OSHA employee mandate, I can see why they don't want to lose on federal contractors.
Yeah.
So this one gives me pause.
And it probably gives 9 other AGs pauses because we saw in that story there were 9 states there.
Right.
You know. That would send a message if right. that was what was attended.
Yeah, this is how organized crime operates.
Yeah.
And this right. is
it's
the sovereignty.
With the model.
Right. This is the sovereignty issue.
Right. Right. Who's the boss? Who's the law enforcer?
Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Let's hit charts.
Okay. Let's go. Ready?
Okay. First chart, our favorite.
Inflation.
Yep. But at the top, you see nothing's really changed here.
Right.
Coffee at the top. It's just like, am I looking at the same chart? Does this thing ever change? Coffee's at the top. The way I know which week it is to track the chart and to know whether it's changed is I find lumber.
Right.
Lumber last time was way up. This time it's in the middle.
Yeah, it's come down.
It's in the middle. And then, of course, the inevitable VIX, the basement dweller.
So what this says is you're going to pay a lot more you know, to turn on your heater and have oatmeal and coffee while Wall Street's going to enjoy the Fed put, right?
Yep. Yep. That's exactly what that chart says.
Right.
All right. Not much has changed there. Let's keep it going. Go to the next chart. Here we go. S&P 500 versus what do we got here?
Yeah, so we start off with the going direct reset vote in August 2019. So right, I just wanted to take here. A look. You know, so QQQ is basically the tech stocks. It's the NASDAQ. It's up almost 100 points since the going direct reset started. That's double the S&P, which is up 55%. Then the European ETF is up 37%, the emerging markets 29%. If we had looked at China separately, they'd be below that. They're now a big part of the emerging market ETF anyway. So, but what it shows you is the going direct reset is working terrifically for the tech companies in America.
Yep.
Yeah. So the so the unipolar model is extending its life with the going direct reset.
No doubt about that. Yeah. All right, let's keep it going. Here we have.
Yeah. So now S&P. I wanted to look at sort of this, the, you know, who's safe trade. So S&P again, going, we start at the going direct reset, August 2019, S&P up 55%, silver up 30%, gold up 18%, and the treasury, long treasury up 2%. Given the credit quality, it's amazing. It's, you know, in the positive at all. But yeah, if interest rates rise, it's going down. So anyway, but this says people are still confident in the system.
Wow. Wow. Confident in a treasury, for sure.
Well, no, but confident in equities. I mean, you're seeing a lot of yes. money move out of fixed income into equities. Because they know inflation is, as that fellow who didn't know better at Davos says, inflation is not going away soon.
Right. So, in other words, if they weren't confident, this S&P would be below the precious metals and
right.
above.
Right.
Okay. Good. Very good point. Okay. Let's keep it going. Bitcoin. This looks like a. How
far? I think this is a 5-year chart. So I asked for a 5-year chart.
Yeah, this is so, a five. Yeah. Yep.
So as this you can see, Bitcoin hit 18. A higher high in November. It's high point, and that was the top market cap on the crypto market at about $3 trillion. And it's come down from about 67,000 to 37,000. So it's come down quite a way. And again, there's going to be a problem if you hit the tax time and if you swapped at the top and didn't take money off the table to pay your taxes with, you're going to hit tax time and be in a bit of a squeeze. So I always feel sorry for the retail investors, because if you look at the pressure to talk people in September, October, November, it was manic. And if they got talked in, you know, they have to ride through, you know, many would say there's another pump coming, and that very well could be true. But, you know, if you're not used to these kinds of this kind of swing, you know, and we've seen that kind of swing in the stock market too. So that's the hard thing for many people going into real assets or something speculative. So, you know, you're going
to
see.
I'm not used to that kind of swing myself at all.
I am, because of silver and gold. I'm used to very significant swing. And that's why in a world like this, you've got to know what you own and why you own it and not get scared out of it. Because that's how people, you know, they're not prepared to deal with the volatility, and then they really get hurt on it. They buy high and sell low.
So that's the 5-year, 3,700%. Let's go to, let me hit this.
I think this we did a 1-year.
Yeah, 1-year.
Yeah.
8%.
Right. 8% now, but it was up almost to 60% at, you know, at the, and again in November.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, 90% there.
Right.
You know, and that, yeah, in April, last April, 80%.
Right.
So, but a lot of volatility. I mean, you know, it's this here at the bottom, that's minus 15%, you know? I mean, but that's over a year.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it, I believe. Any more charts? Nope.
Nope. Okay. God knows what's going to happen next week.
Yeah. a lot of things to keep our eye on, and I'll try to read up on that International Criminal Court and see. I'm just bewildered by that, but I'll check it out.
Okay, we'll see what we can find, because I'd love to see that spread. In the meantime, wouldn't it be great if we could find out what Melinda Gates's portfolio has been reallocated to?
That would be that you. I just saw that this morning. So.
Oh, I don't mean where the money's going philanthropically. I want to know what stocks, are the stocks. Yeah.
No, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, John, thank you. Great week. Have a wonderful week. I look forward to talking to you next week. And just all I can say is expect the unexpected, because a lot can happen in a week around here.
A lot can happen. I need to be like a fly with 100 eyes on its head. While tracking all these different stories. There's no way to keep track. It's crazy.
Okay, well, in 2 weeks, I just want to do one. I lost it. I had the copy, the new wrap-up, the hard copy for CBDC just came from the printer. I was going to hold it up. But, in fact, a very important politician wanted a copy, and I gave it away today. So, anyway, so imagine, and I'm holding it up, but... If you're a print plus digital subscriber, you will get your hard copy in the mail. The U.S. printer, the printer in Europe is done. The U.S. printer should have it in 2 weeks. And two boxes are headed on the way to you. And I should mention Cash and Coin. We've had unbelievable success in January. I want to thank all the subscribers, because PayPal had put a cap on our sales. And we were able to bring our sales from above the cap to, it's communist country now, right? So, So we were able to bring our sales from well above the cap to well below the cap, thanks to Cash and Coin. It was wildly successful. And I just want to remind everybody, if you haven't converted to Cap and Coin, you can pick up an extra free 3 months bonus if you convert. So I would really encourage you to convert from online systems to Cash and Coin. And it would mean the world to us, because it's a lot more labor intensive system, but it gets us out of the world of payment companies you're trying to censor.
Yeah, I don't see PayPal on the list of bad companies that we covered in the third story.
They're not. Here. So I guess they're not mandating.
Yeah, look here. Netflix, New York Times, no PayPal.
It was very interesting, because, they were doing all these things, throwing everybody off, and suddenly their stock tanked. And we talked about it last month in the last Money in Markets we did, and I've yet to be able to figure out how much of it is people leaving PayPal. If you just look at our subscriber base, the number of people canceling their PayPal account is significant.
Yeah, that's so great.
I don't know.
I love it when people vote with their feet and companies have to buckle. It's great.
Right.
It's the best.
It is the best.
Okay.
Okay. Have a great week, John.
All right. See you next week.